All I require is to sit in the sun, read my book, alone.
What's the matter? Don't you like books?
Books, young man. Books, thousands of them. If time wasn't so important, I'd show you something. My library. Thousands of books.
Welcome to episode 4 of our Trek Book Club podcast with me, Rob Chapman, and my co-host, Rick.
Hello.
And just to remind everyone, the Trek Book Club podcast is a monthly podcast all about Star Trek books. And the Star Trek books we're reading as part of our Trek Book Club on Twitter, which you can find and join in by following the Twitter handle at Trek Book Club or by following hashtag Trek Book Club. And casting your mind way back to the last podcast we did. So the last episode we did was we discussed the third book we read for our Twitter Trek Book Club, which was Star Trek Discovery Desperate Hours.
Yeah.
And yes. So this time for our fourth Trek Book Club session on Twitter, which took place way back in the end of the end of November, the beginning of December 2017.
Yes.
And I put it to a vote on Twitter as to which book we should read. And I gave four options, and the options were Star Trek Enterprise, The Good That Men Do, Star Trek, the original series, Spock's World, Star Trek TNG, Death in Winter, and Star Trek Voyager, Homecoming. And in reverse order, there was 85 people voted, and it was quite a close call, this one. Enterprise, The Good That Men Do got 19% of the votes. TNG, Death in Winter got 21% of the votes. Voyager, Homecoming got 28% of the vote. And Spock's World got 32% of the vote. So it was quite a close one, that one. So the Trek Book Clubbers voted to read Spock's World for November 2017, beginning of December 2017. And I chose to include, I was secretly rooting for Voyager Homecoming in that one. But the reason I put Spock's World in that vote is I'd read around and found lots of Star Trek book related websites and podcasts. And Spock's World seemed to be one that kept coming up on, you know, like top 10 lists of Star Trek books to read. And a good friend of mine and fellow Trekkie, Justin Oser, who's one of the co-hosts on Earl Grey on Trek FM. He contributes regularly to Trek Book Club, the Twitter discussions. He recommended this one as well. He said it was one of his favourites, so I thought it was a good one to include in the votes. And so that's the one we're talking about on this episode.
Excellent.
So just a quick introduction, it's Spock's World, written by Diane Duane, and it features the characters from the original series, but focuses mainly on Kirk, Spock, McCoy and Sarek on Vulcan. And it was published way back in 1988, which I think is shortly after the start of the original airing of TNG. Which is quite interesting.
It is, yeah. They launched in 1987.
Literally just after.
And I suppose with lead-in times for writing towards publishing, there's every chance most of that was written before TNG had aired.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if you wanted to read or go through the synopsis or the summary of what the book is about.
There is.
Yes, sir.
Tell me a story.
All right.
I'm going to do the synopsis slightly out of order because the structure of this book is, well, it's telling two stories. So rather than flitting back and forth, I'm going to focus firstly on the Enterprise era story and the story that takes place on the Enterprise and then on the historical Vulcan one separately, just because I'll be flitting back and forth. So, okay, I shall begin with my summary. So Ambassador Sarek is summoned back to Vulcan because one of the houses of Vulcan legislature has voted to take the planet out of the United Federation of Planets. The High Council has decided this important issue must be debated and voted on by the population. T'Pau summons Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and several others to speak at the debates. The Enterprise, which has been undergoing reprovisioning at Earth, sets out once all crew are aboard. During the traditional crew mixer held after a refit or extended shore leave, the Enterprise rendezvous with the USS Coromandel to take aboard passengers headed for Vulcan. These turn out to include Katilk, who has renamed herself Kustilk after her death and rebirth, and will also testify at the debates, as well as Sarek and Amanda. The Enterprise flies to Vulcan, where Kirk and McCoy are received very rudely by Shath, a young Vulcan who supports secession. McCoy develops suspicions of who is behind the secession movement, traces it to Spock's former wife, T'Pring, and her support of various small splinter groups. Silk testifies against secession. Spock meets with T'Pring, who claims to be financing the movement from money she made by investing the estate of her late husband, Stom, in the interstellar commodities markets. McCoy testifies against secession. Sarek, who'd supported Vulcan autonomy early in his career, testifies in favour of it, being forced to do so by his government. McCoy then asks Sarek from the floor about his government's opinion concerning bribes by groups expecting to buy, at low bids, Federation public property on Vulcan. With the help of Moira, the Enterprise's recreation computer, McCoy produces evidence that T'Pring has been financing the anti-Federation campaign by funneling payoffs from potential buyers of Federation property to Vulcan government officials. Kirk testifies against secession, but is interrupted by news that T'Pau is critically ill. Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Sarek and Amanda visit T'Pau's bedside. She dies, but not before she instructs Sarek to make public the information about T'Pring's schemes and passes her capture to Amanda. After T'Pau's funeral, Spock testifies against secession. The debates end, the voting begins. One full Vulcan day later, the voting stops and the results strongly oppose secession. Kirk, Spock and McCoy visit T'Pring in prison, where McCoy strongly urges her to start acting like a Vulcan. Back on the Enterprise, McCoy suggests that T'Pau may have timed her death to influence the outcome of the debates. Kirk expresses concern about Moira's evident sentience and unethical behaviour, but asks her to talk to him about a raise. So that's the original series era story. But concurrently running with that is one on ancient Vulcan. So that starts with a description of the formation of the triple star system, later known to Earth astronomers as 40 Eridani, including the planet Vulcan and its companion T'Kut. The early hominid species on Vulcan live in a lush, comfortable environment and slowly acquire a language of words to supplement their telepathic imagery. Then their star, Vulcan's sun, undergoes a serious malfunction, swells and burns away the forests, melts the ice caps, and kills nearly every living thing on the planet. The Vulcan species rises to a tribal existence of family groups. They huddle in small clans near the few water springs, eking out a difficult living. One tribe has developed a mutation of eyes with an inner eyelid. They successfully take the fortress of Felsht, which is cascading water from a rich spring. Their leader in battle forms a strategic alliance to share the eye with other tribes, and slowly more alliances spread advantageous physical traits through the species, including such traits as an ability to sense the presence of metal in the ground, for Vulcan is metal poor. Eventually, the Vulcans have reached a stage of civilization where they are attempting to construct a spaceship to fly to T'Kut, which has metal lying on its surface. But there is a five-decade delay because of a family incident, resulting in one member, T'Thela, killing many others with mind power. In the pre-Reformation period, a Vulcan asteroid mining ship discovers three huge diamonds inside an asteroid. The resulting dispute leads to the deaths of the entire family and the destruction of their vessel, which was on a collision course with a Ashif station owned by the Manher Protectorate. Believing this was a terrorist attack, Manher destroys a station belonging to its enemy nation, Lalir, with the Vulcan species' first antimatter bomb. History reaches the time of Surak. There has never been a time in recorded history that more than 10% of Vulcan was not at war. Surak is stunned to see a new weapon tested by his nation at proving grounds on T'Kut and retreats into the desert to think, meets one of the underliers, subsurface creatures of great intelligence, and begins writing. Surak eventually wins a large number of disciples, and logic sweeps the planet, while others reject his reforms and choose to construct spaceships and seek another homeworld to settle. They become the Romulans. A young man named Sarek is appointed by T'Pau to serve at the Vulcan Embassy on Earth, a new ally and to explore and experience the planet and send her reports. Eventually, Sarek is made the cultural attaché at the embassy, and he meets Amanda Grayson. Together, they're involved in the Universal Translator Project, and ultimately, they get married. Vulcan geneticists study how they may have a child, undertake the necessary planning, and produce an embryo from Sarek and Amanda's genetic material. And that obviously brings us up to present day. Yeah. So, whoa, that's kind of a crazy structure they had there.
Yeah, it was. I found it quite jarring at times, flitting between the Enterprise, Vulcan, you know, the prehistory of Vulcan.
Yeah,
it was interesting to be told that, but it was quite, odd.
It's one of those things. I like it, but not all of it necessarily fed into the main story in a way that made it particularly satisfying to have to keep flitting back and forth. Vulcan history was quite interesting, and I liked generally the way it was presented. If more of these events had fed into the other story, I think it might have felt slightly more satisfying.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah. Mm. So thinking about the, as I know when we're discussing the books on Twitter, we always start with a really shallow description of what we think about the front cover.
Yes.
What did you think about the cover of Spock's World?
I mean, it's. I think I probably would have liked to have seen more people on it. The title is Spock's World, so you'd expect Spock on the cover, and that's what it gives you.
The cover literally is Spock and his world. A lot of the, perhaps the ones that we've read, I'm just trying to think back, the Discovery ones, and they're mainly a character, and that's not really much else. It doesn't really give much away. But although I did like, because, I mean, the cover just has this really solemn picture of Spock looking very Vulcan, very serious. But I like the fact that it was, I think it looked like artwork as opposed to a photograph, like a picture taken of Spock on, series or films.
Yeah.
So I did like that.
Yeah, it was a good painting. Mm. But I think given the importance, it would have been good to have featured like Sarek and Amanda and T'Pau. Maybe even to Pring.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So moving on to what we thought about the storyline, the plots, characters, any themes we thought might be in there?
Well, I mean, what's great about this, obviously, even though this book is 30 years old, the theme of it about Vulcan's secession from the Federation is quite relevant to us in the current day, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite eerie how relevant it is to the current day, the whole idea of Vulcan seceding from the Federation. This idea of, well, essentially racism, this fear of outsiders, you know, that...
Yeah, I mean... there's a distinct parallel, obviously, you could draw to Brexit.
Yeah.
Being essentially a form of a secession from a large unity.
Yeah. Or even the US kind of pulling back from its standing in the world as a massive global player, you know, with Trump now is saying, you know, we're not going to pulling out of the Paris climate accords and trying to scale back influence in foreign wars and things like that.
It feels in many ways like today's world there is an overwhelming trend to pull back from group unity and sort of take care of number one. I obviously don't mean Commander Riker. I think this book mirrors that quite interesting. I find it quite interesting that it's the most logical species of all that have this this feeling as well.
Yeah, it's, I think if you were going to think of a species that would be the ones to pull out of the Federation, I don't think you would immediately think it would be the Vulcans that would, you know, maybe the Andorians or I can't even think of any others, but they're so central to the Federation.
I suppose that's kind of what makes this interesting. That it's very different where we say that draws these parallels to current situations. The difference is the Vulcans are having a logical argument about it, whereas I think there's a lot more emotion underlying the various issues facing the world we live in.
Yeah.
And you just have to look at any Twitter or Facebook discussion on issues like Brexit to see that it is a very emotionally charged issue for a lot of people.
Because there's quite conflicting arguments about, even the Vulcans are having conflicting arguments. I think I'm right in thinking that there's some Vulcans are thinking that it's, they don't want anything to do with the Federation and humans are uncivilized and barbaric. And then there are others that think that Vulcans are almost not a bad influence, but are not a good influence on humanity. And actually they might be holding them back or influencing them too much. So it's quite interesting to see two different arguments as to why they should secede.
Yeah, and I like that even though this was obviously written, as you say, in the before the advent of Next Gen, really, when you look at something like Enterprise, a lot of that is still relevant with the way the Vulcans are portrayed there. There are certain prejudices that the Vulcans hold against humans, but even then they can have logical thoughts about that. So it's kind of quite interesting from that perspective, because there were some aspects of it, I think, that don't hold up in the way that now, obviously, we've had very different portrayals of Vulcan in these other series going on. So I think some stuff, obviously, falls down a little bit in terms that it doesn't really adhere to canon or various other sort of characterizations we've seen. But some of those aspects of, like, the Vulcans' feelings about humans are very much relevant to how we see the sort of things we see, say, Ambassador Saval say in Enterprise. Yeah. So it's quite interesting how some stuff is very, very spot on, while other stuff I felt in the book sort of doesn't quite now gel with how all the other Star Trek has been on since.
Which I guess is bound to happen, given that this is written, even before TNG, I guess this was before we'd the Golden Age.
Well, ultimately, I think the author did this based on the three series of the original and the four movies that she had at that point. So, whereas I think we see a lot of stuff like, there's a lot of talk about money and being paid in that, and I think that's sort of something that doesn't really hold up in the way the Federation's portrayed now. So as that's one particular example that sort of stuck out to me is, Kirk's always on about money and giving people a raise or docking their wages and stuff. It's just like, what are you on about, Kirk? Nobody gets paid.
I quite enjoyed the dilemma that this proposed secession puts Spock, Sarek and Amanda in.
That's kind of...
Yeah, the fact that they've got to choose essentially to either, stay with the Federation and essentially be exiled from their home, or, stay with their planet and not have anything to do with the Federation ever again. Mm. It's particularly for poor Amanda, because, her husband and son, but also, she's human, so... Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I wonder though. I wonder whether it seemed a bit anticlimactic that we've had TNG, DS9, Voyager, more films, Discovery. We know that Vulcan doesn't secede. So I wonder whether we're reading this now and it's not actually that much, of a risk, because we know how it's gonna end. So I didn't know whether that was maybe a little bit anticlimactic. If there was actually a real possibility that they could have seceded.
Yeah, I think we if it had been a novel you picked up and the Enterprise was attending the potential secession of some world we'd never heard of, you don't know how that novel's going to end. They might succeed, they might not. But in this case, I think we all read it knowing full well how it was going to go. But then I think part of the fun of the journey is exploring the Vulcans as they get there. And I think that's probably the biggest appeal of the book was what's Sarek's feelings on, what not his feelings. He'd go mad if you heard me say that. Well, he wouldn't. He'd be very calm and logical. But yeah, what's his opinions on it? And then the intrigue about him.
Yeah.
T'Pau tells him to argue a certain way and he has to follow that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite a fascinating one. So
I really enjoyed the... I really enjoyed the speeches that each of the, you know, Kirk, McCoy, Spock, Sarek give in their like their attempts to persuade the Vulcans one way or the other whether to leave or stay.
Oh yes,
I thought each of their speeches was really really different, but really, and I don't know which if you had a particular favourite out of the speeches.
McCoy's.
Yeah. You really wouldn't have thought it, again, you wouldn't have thought it would be him that would make the most impassioned speech and the most effective, really.
I think that's one of the big things I've always loved about the original series is that despite all the bluster and argument McCoy and Spock have, the two of them have a very deep respect and a very deep friendship. So when McCoy makes that was spot on for the way that McCoy really feels about Spock and Vulcans and the actual respect he has for them.
Yeah, because I think isn't he talking to them in their in their language? So he's taken the time to learn.
Oh, he's
this.
Full of surprises.
Even though, like you say, we see this playful sparring between them, but actually, he must, you know, clearly respect Spock and Vulcans and. And you know, he passionately argues that Vulcan's better in the Federation, and the Federation would be weaker without them.
Mm.
I was really impressed with his speech. I thought that was really really good.
Yeah, it definitely was. I was one of the highlights, I think, of the book for me. It's McCoy standing up to do that.
Yeah,
not necessarily surprising me, but I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well. It was spot on for the characterization.
Yeah,
and it was a really awesome moment.
So. I liked it is not really important to the storyline, but there was a bit where Diane Duane, the author, makes a point of showing or telling the reader about the fact that Uhura is working on a doctoral thesis about improving universal translator theory, and I thought that was really really good because I haven't seen a huge amount of TOS, but from what I know about it, it does sometimes have a tendency. Be a little bit have women in tokenistic roles. They're not really, you know, they're not like what they are in TNG, DS9, Voyager. And it was really nice to see her, you know, being portrayed as, you know, what she is, a really valued Absolutely. Member of the crew. She's really intelligent. She's equal to the rest of them. It made me think of. I don't know if you've seen Galaxy Quest,
you have, yes.
The film Galaxy Quest, Sigourney Weaver's character, who, without being rude, is literally a bimbo, just repeating the words of the computer without actually having any function on the ship other than repeating the computer. And sometimes it did feel like Uhura was did do that, but in this book, she clearly is a incredibly intelligent woman if she's, you know,
yes,
carrying out this doctoral thesis. And you know, I like the fact that they included that, showed a different side to her.
Absolutely, because I think it was one of those things that it's important to remember that although it was never necessarily portrayed, she is supremely competent in her job. In fact, she's genius level in terms of languages and things. I think that's something maybe like the Kelvinverse movies attempted to show a bit, say in the first one when they had her talking about intercepted transmissions and the way she handles languages and things, so I think they've attempted to maybe redress it a little bit in a way there. But I mean, I think she had a moment. There's a one I cannot remember the episode, but there is I think she's repairing or rebuilding her communications console, and she says to Spock how it's very delicate and difficult work. And Spock's response is, I can't think of anyone more qualified, which I thought that's fine. It's a rare occurrence, but it was at least an on-screen in dialogue acknowledgement that she has a supreme, she's not just there to answer the phone on the bridge. You know, she is there because she's a damn good officer with exceptional skills. So,
yeah.
But yes, I really enjoyed that this book reinforced that.
Yeah, yeah. I liked that there was a section of the book that described Vulcan's experience of their first contact with off-worlders. I thought that was really interesting. It was some sort of pirates who were the first to arrive on, and I think they kind of duped the Vulcans. They kind of deceived them into thinking they needed help, something along those lines. And the Vulcans were completely taken. The Vulcans were being quite generous and helpful and kind. And these pirates just basically landed on Vulcan and you know, invaded and took hostages, killed people, looted. And it's quite interesting, that experience, how it maybe might have influenced some Vulcans into, you know, becoming very insular and protective and not wanting any contact. I thought that was quite interesting, how it might have made them, you know, a bit xenophobic, maybe or even seeing other species as, you know, they're inferior and we've got to conquer them before they conquer us.
It certainly would be consistent with the way things are portrayed. And I mean, for a start, for instance, you could take the Vulcan hello as a sign that, you know, the Vulcans will you hurt them once and then they're not going to take it. You know, they're going to adapt and react accordingly in the future. So they do have a logical progression. So whereas their first contact with the pirates, and then they have it alters their attitude to outsiders. Likewise, when they, after first contact with the Klingons, they then know to shoot first, kind of thing. So
yeah. So what I'm thinking about, I mean, we've talked a lot about characters anyway, but what did you think of T'Pring as a character and as a villain?
Oh, I mean, she kind of always, Amok Time is one of my absolute favourite episodes of the original series, and bringing that was absolutely fantastic. But yeah, she obviously comes across extremely cold, calculating and logical. So I don't know if I necessarily translate that to villain in this way, but I think it was done effectively. I think it worked for the case of this. So, because obviously she'd given up her chance to be with Spock, to be with Ston, and then she lost Ston. So it's kind of who knows? That can obviously have an impact on her motivations and her attitudes.
Yeah, yeah. There's a section in the book which really puts it quite well in how she like seizes upon her people's anxieties and fears and manipulates them to achieve her own ends. So in that sense, I thought she was really manipulative, really cunning. She's, you know, plays people's feelings really well to get her own way.
So she's like Boris Johnson or Nigel Farage then.
I had that in my notes. Certain people's names in politics crop up quite a lot, and they're two.
I'm totally weirded out by the fact I've just compared T'Pring to Boris Johnson. That might ruin a mock time for me. But yes, I mean, you get it's very consistent with the sort of behaviour that comes up at these sorts of times. It play on a fear, aggravate it, build it up, and manipulate it and take advantage of it. And I think that's something we've definitely seen in many ways. I mean, regardless of your views on the Brexit issue, rightly or wrongly, there are some key figures in that who purport to fight for one side or the other, but are, to my mind, probably out to enhance their own standing more than they actually care about the ultimate outcome.
Yeah, I mean, without wanting to get too political. I mean, some of the key players in the whole Brexit debate, you know, that they've claimed to be wanting to do this for, you know, for Britain and to get the best for Britain. But, you know, where's Nigel Farage now? You know, he's kind of like, you know, got his way, and now he's disappeared, and, you know, he's got his nice cushy job in the US presenting on Fox. And
well, it wasn't that long ago, actually, he was appearing and saying, maybe we should have another referendum just to put the whole issue to bed. It's like, no, you want another referendum to still seem relevant.
Yeah.
And I think that's your problem. I think in many ways, he preferred to not have got his way, because then he could still be there getting attention, fighting for something, having won it. He's no longer necessary, and I don't think that sits well with him sometimes.
I feel like this book has, I don't know if you've seen the Tricorder Transmissions podcast, Politrex.
Yes.
But I feel like we've kind of become a little bit one of them.
We've veered into that territory a little bit, yeah.
This book is very political, so it is hard not to, really.
It's one of those things, if we'd done Trek Book Club like 3 years ago and read this book, I don't think it would have resonated. But it's in the last couple of years, I think it's obviously, and it's got a lot more relevance. So it's an interesting time to be doing a book like this.
Yeah,
which you know, being as I say, it was written sort of 30 plus years ago. Kind of weird that we find it at this point in history.
Yeah, the author must have. Maybe they're clairvoyant. They can see into the future, see what's going to happen. Because it is eerily.
Well.
Yeah, has a lot of similarities.
Yeah, it's one of these. But I think that's maybe something Star Trek does very well.
It does, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it can make this commentary and you might think, oh, that's a nice little allegory. And then sort of 10 years down the line, all of a sudden you're like, oh, that episode makes a whole lot more sense now, and the way things
are. Yeah, I always think of at the time when I watched the Voyager episode. What's it called? It's the season 7 episode where it's basically it's all about healthcare and the rationing of healthcare. I can't remember.
Critical care?
Critical care, that's it. And I remember at the time thinking it was a good episode, but not really understanding what it was about or what it might be saying about our society. And now I'm like, you know, particularly in the US, Britain in the US with the NHS and how desperate the situation is getting there, and in the US with the situation with healthcare over there, it's basically telling us how awful things can get when we don't have, you know, a humane healthcare system. So.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Because very soon you get to the point where someone's future care is determined by the size of the bank balance. That means someone's worth is dependent on their wealth, and that's not a good place to be in as a society.
Definitely not. So I don't know if you've got anything else you wanted to say about the book before we maybe move on to what others.
I mean, generally, I kind of liked it. I probably, out of all the books we've done in book club, it's maybe the one I've liked the least. That's partly because some things maybe jarred with me a little bit because they've changed now. Trek has continued and they've established new things for a lot of stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of use of money in it. What I did like was Dwayne has done significant world building in her Trek novels. There's another one she's written that I read a while back called The Wounded Sky. And Katilk is actually originally from in that book. And it also features Herb Tanzer, who runs the wreck deck on the Enterprise. So there's some consistent characters and concepts that she weaves around her books, which is quite interesting and rewarding if you put the time in to read them. That's just going to... That's a few other observations I had on it, really. So, but generally, I enjoyed it. And I did like the whole thing of Vulcan history, even though it's obviously, as I say, not all of it stands up in what we know now. I think Enterprise filled in some gaps there in Surak that maybe contradict this a little bit. But it was good. It was a good fun read. So ultimately, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with everything you said. It's I mean, even when we, I think most Buffy fans would agree. Even when you say something's your least favorite, you're still saying it's awesome. It's just the least awesome. So I really like the book. It wasn't my favorite. But yeah, I enjoyed it. There were bits that I were more fond of than others. Like I said, I really enjoy the speeches. There were bits I didn't like as much or found a bit jarring, you know, the movement in times, places, and whatever. But no, it was good. It's a good book.
Captain, we're receiving 285,000 hails.
So thinking about or looking back to see what people commented on or questions they raised when we were reading the book for the Trek Book Club on Twitter. Do you have anything or any comments you'd picked out that people had made or replied to?
There's a couple, but unfortunately I've sort of lost them at the moment.
I've got a few I can talk about. I asked at one point whether what people thought of T'Pring and whether they thought she was a villain or a good villain. At, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, at Sadronarawa?
Yeah.
So Sadronarawa. They replied, she's got to be up there, surely, with Vulcan's very own Trump.
Which, yeah.
I think pretty much is what we said.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think on the day we did on Twitter touch on the Brexit analogies and the political thing. So,
Yeah. Someone needs to get an image of T'Pring now and just put that awful Donald Trump hair on her.
Crikey. Yeah, that's about as bad as the Boris Johnson comparison.
I also asked what people thought of McCoy's speech and testimony, because we talked about that earlier, about how much we liked it. So what they thought of his speech to the Vulcans secession committee in Spock's world, and whether they thought it was successful, powerful. And at Scott Skiles 1701 commented, I think it's one of the highlights of the entire book. Kirk's aside about the Doctor being a damn good shrink has always stuck with me, as has Bones' coward's comeback. Also, his threat to come down there and bite. I can't remember he couldn't remember the person's name. He said it was a crowning moment to him. Also, to this day, I use the line, the spear in the other side is the spear in your own. You are he. It's a powerful line and a wonderful cap to the entire scene. As to the matter of secession, I say hell no. He really liked, he agreed with us that he really liked McCoy's speech and testimony. Did you have any? Have you got any that you?
Yeah, you'd asked the question about Spock and Amanda.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Amethyst at Space Junk with 2 Ks said, "I like it. It shows any two different species can come together and have a successful relationship. I feel like it also eased the tensions between humans and Vulcans too, with Sarek being an ambassador. Similar to how two people of different cultures fall in love, perhaps they become attracted to these differences. It's more interesting because they can learn more about each other's traditions and accept their values," which I thought was a brilliant, really, obviously a really Star Trek way of looking at it.
Yeah. I had one more. I asked people what they thought of T'Pau's final act of giving her Catra to Amanda. Sadronarawa said, it also shows T'Pau is a clever old biddy. And it was a logical thing to do for the best interests of Vulcan. And at Clara Jean MC said, it makes a lot of sense to me and shows how Amanda has become part of Vulcan society. Which
yes.
Really,
absolutely. Yeah.
So lots of really great comments that people and questions that people came up with. I mean, did you have any more that you wanted to highlight?
I mean, as always, there's an immense amount of fantastic comments. I really enjoy the conversation that we have on book club days is amazing. So,
each time, each one we have, more and more people seem to get involved, more and more questions come up, more and more comments. So it's great. Keep them coming. I really enjoy. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've got one more from Adam Hunal. While I like a number of things in Spock's world more than canon, I do enjoy the idea that Vulcans were the first aliens humans met. It seems appropriate the origin of the Star Trek universe was a human and Vulcan shaking hands.
Yes.
So, because it obviously it touches on the thing I raised that a large amount of Spock's world is now sort of rendered uncanon. Not that canon is necessarily the most important thing as long as the story's good, but he specifically calls out that there's some things that he prefers over that, which is good.
Yeah.
But I always also enjoy he's raised the symbolism of, you know, Star Trek is founded on a human and a Vulcan shaking hands, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Image, really. That's where it all begins for the optimistic future that we all love.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah.
So at the end of each book, I put out a poll for people to rate the book, to give it a grade. And so I asked people to rate Spock's World via a Twitter poll. And the final result, not a huge amount of votes cast, 19 people voted. Mm-hmm. 47% of people that voted rated the book or gave it an A. 32% gave it a B. 16% gave it a C. And 5% rated it as D or lower.
Really?
So almost half of those that voted gave it an A. So it's quite a popular one. With the Trek Book Club fans, that suited it quite well. I'm pretty sure I think I gave it a B myself.
I often feel that just the sheer quality of the discussion we have on Book Club Day boosts any book in my mind. So I don't know if I maybe give the book one grade higher than I would, but just because of how good the conversation is.
People often raise things or make comments that I wouldn't even think of or I completely missed. So I agree with that. It definitely does enhance how you.
It's one of the great things about doing it is you get some thoughts on the book completely different to the ones you'd had. So you rather than just read it and definitely. Think, oh, that was good. I like this bit or this bit. You get to do that, and then people say, oh, this bit was great because of this, and you're just like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that, and it's fantastic. So it's a really good way to be doing this. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's pretty much it for Spock's World. So if you're interested in taking part in Trek Book Club, remember you can follow us on Twitter, and we're at Trek Book Club. So we'd love you to come and take part, take part in the discussions. Newbies, welcome, or veterans, welcome too. And we have a different book each month, a different Star Trek book each month. Sometimes it's open to a vote. Sometimes we just choose one. Come and join in. So, and you can also listen to myself and Rick discussing each of these books we read for Trek Book Club on this podcast, which can be found I think I'm right in saying Lower Decks Radio. .co.uk.
You are exactly right in saying that, yes.
Go and check out our previous episodes and stay tuned for future ones. We're always happy to hear your thoughts, questions, comments on the books that we read and our podcast. So do get in touch with myself and Rick. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Trekkie Rob. And where can people find you, Rick?
They can find me at TrekFanRick, which will come up as Lower Pile on Rick on Twitter. And you can also find me often on my other podcast at 10 Backward. Although I'm on a little bit of a hiatus there at the moment, but I shall be hopefully coming back very soon. And there we just discuss Trek generally.
Cool. Yeah, definitely check that out. And lastly, have you been listening to any good Star Trek podcasts or YouTube channels or watching any Trek lately? Is there anything you wanted to give a shout out to or highlight?
I particularly got into Delta Flyer podcast lately, which I've been really enjoying.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people give that glowing reviews. I've listened to a couple of episodes, and Thad Hates podcast. Is it Tyrannicus? I think that's his.
Tyrannicus, so yeah,
definitely check that out.
Absolutely. I mean, not just because he gave me a shout out for an episode recently. it's always good. It's great fun, actually, because those are some Voyager episodes from way back now that they're running through. So it's a lot
been
reviewed.
So I think they're working their way through season one at the moment.
Yes, they're about done. But it's definitely worth getting into that now while it's still early on, I think.
So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely check out Thad's podcast because he's a regular contributor to Trek Book Club.
Absolutely.
The discussions we have, so definitely check out his podcast. I was lucky enough to be invited back on Trek Live recently.
Very good it was, too.
We had a brilliant discussion about our favourite first officers, which was a lot of fun. Myself, Dan and Bill chose our favourite first officers and talked about them. And yeah, we all picked a different one, which was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. And also to give a shout out to, I don't know if you listen to any of the podcasts on the Nerd Party, because they've got into a bit of I think they're facing some a bit of a legal battle, and some I'm not quite sure the details, but they're raising funds to try and fight off this stupid legal battle that's been put against them. And they produce some really awesome content. And Tristan Rydell, who's the creator of the Nerd Party, he was one of the co-hosts for To the Journey on Trek FM, the Voyager podcast. He produces some brilliant podcasts. And he knows his Trek, so definitely have a listen to the Nerd Party. And if you can donate to their legal battle funds to help them out, because I know they're looking for generous donations from their fans. So definitely check that out and donate if you can. So that's it for episode. I think that was episode 4. I think
it was episode 4.
It was episode 4. So that's it for episode 4 for Spock's World.
Wow, is that a book?
And we look forward to you joining us next time on Trek Book Club, when we will be discussing our selection, our Trek Book Club selection for December 2017 and January 2018. So it'd be
a
two-parter, where we discussed the first in the Star Trek Voyager relaunch series, Star Trek Voyager Homecoming and Star Trek Voyager The Farther Shore, which are both by Christy Golden. So until then, live long and prosper, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening.
Then I'm going to my cabin, I'm going to put my feet up, I'm going to turn on my personal relaxation light, and I'm going to lose myself in the pages of some old novel.